Until this battle station is fully operational, we are vulnerable. The Rebel Alliance is too well equipped. They're more dangerous than you realize.
Dangerous to your Starfleet, Commander, not to this battle station.
The Rebellion will continue to gain a support in the Imperial Senate.
The Imperial Senate will no longer be of any concern to us. I have just received word that the Emperor has dissolved the Council permanently. The last remnants of the old Republic have been swept away.
That's impossible. How will the Emperor maintain control without the bureaucracy?
The regional governors now have direct control over their territories. Fear will keep the local systems in line. Fear of this battle station.
Edition of the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson from Guelph Politico. I hope you've been enjoying these mayoral candidate talks so far, and today we have one of the two main contenders for the job, Mayor Karen Farbridge, who is running for her fourth term as the mayor of the Royal City. That is coming up, but first a little bit of housekeeping. You can listen to all the previous interviews I have done with the Guelph mayoral candidates. Just go to the Meet the Candidates page, which is the icon on the right-hand side of the screen at the Guelph Politico site, guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca. It says, Your Face Here. It's a picture of City Hall, and when you click on that, it takes you to a page that lists all the candidates in the election, including the mayoral candidates. You click on the name, it takes you to the podcast. And of course, underneath that, you will see the City Council candidates. You click on the name there, it will take you to the candidate questionnaire for those city council candidates. So that's worth checking out if you are in the process of deciding who to vote for. As you may know, the online polls are now open. You can vote anytime using your login information that was provided to you by the City of Guelph. Also, advanced polls are now open, and you can go to guelph.ca/vote to find out where the advanced poll is in your neck of the woods. And before we get into the Karen Farbridge interview, just a note, the Cam Guthrie interview is coming due to a communications snafu, nobody's fault. The interview will not be available till October the 24th. It will go up that day. I know that's a couple of days before the election, and you would probably want to hear it sooner, just unfortunately due to circumstances. It will be October 24th when that interview goes online. I just didn't want any accusations that there was partisanship or anything like that. It's just, you know, the roll of the dice. That is the day that, unfortunately, Cam was available. So, that's the way the cookie crumbles, as they say. So October the 24th, Cam Guthrie's interview will go live. But today, we're talking about Karen Farbridge. And she's been the mayor of Guelph for three terms now, from 2000 to 2003, and then from 2006 to 2014. She was a two-term counselor for Ward 1 before that. And she has a Bachelor of Science, a Master's of Science, and a PhD from the University of Guelph. She was an associate professor there. She is also the coordinator of the Ontario Public Interest Research Group on campus for 10 years, where she, in no small way, developed her interest in public policy and the environment, all the things that have played into her mayoralty and her campaign going into this coming election. She's banking that she still has the support out there to qualify for a fourth term, although there is some pretty stiff competition this time. We do talk about the political game, the competition this time out. We talk about the Guelph factor, Urbicon, obviously, taxes, the environment, transit. We cover a wide range of issues, and I think it was a very good conversation, but that's just me. You may have different feelings once you listen. So why don't we go right to the podcast now? This is Karen Farbridge, who I caught up with in her campaign office on Cork Street in downtown Guelph. Karen Farbridge, thank you for joining me.
My pleasure.
So, I guess the first and probably most pertinent question is, why did you want to run for re-election?
There's a number of initiatives that I feel very passionate about that aren't done yet, and so I want to see them through. I think we've got a momentum going on them that would be a real shame to see that lag. And so that's one of the big reasons why I'm committed to going, moving on and continuing to run for mayor, whether it's community well-being or the energy initiative or our economic development strategy. I think feel very strongly about them.
Well, leaving aside, no matter what voters may feel about, you know, your platform or your record, you've been in the office for
11 years as mayor now, yes,
and then 3 years, prior to that. That's a lot. That's a pretty big chunk of your life.
It is a big chunk of my life. I'm very passionate about the city. I guess, you know, for me, it's about working for the community. It's about serving the community, and about, you know, really, it's not about any particular legacy. It really is about putting the city ahead of yourself and building a very caring and prosperous and green community.
Well, just to talk about maybe the politics for a minute, in 2010, perhaps not a fight that required a strong commitment or at least all of your strength. There were only four candidates. This year, you're facing off against six other candidates. Is there a difference between how you're running in 2014 versus how you're running in 2010 or even how you ran in 2006?
No, I think every campaign, you need to put everything into it. Every campaign, you need to get out and cover the city. Every campaign, you need to be getting your message out, articulating your vision. Every campaign is as important as another. So I think that we're just putting as much effort into it as we have in the past.
Do you feel, though, that maybe this has been a tougher campaign for you?
I think this has been, there's certainly a lot more attention with this. So there's been more all candidates meetings booked. There's been more interviews and questionnaires and that type of thing, which I think is really great, because that's why every campaign's important, because it's such a great opportunity that you get, people are interested, people are paying attention finally to municipal politics. We try to get people's attention during the years, but, you know, it's usually about particular issues. So people are talking about municipal politics, so it's a fantastic time to engage people. So the fact that it's even busier this time around, I think, is really a good sign for local democracy.
Well, you said that there are a number of initiatives that are ongoing and that are picking up steam. So looking back at the last term of council, what were some of the highlights for you, and maybe some of the things that you wish you could have put a bit more attention towards?
Well, I think there's a number of them. I think our progress on closing the gap between tax rate increases and the inflation has been significant. I mean, over the 8 years, we've moved it from a high of 9% down to a little bit over 2% now. And so that has come by really focusing on efficiencies. How do we do more with less? It's focused on how do we generate new revenues to come in as well. Because I really believe that we can do this without having to cut services. Mm-hmm. And during that period of time, we've actually enhanced services for people. So we've been able to close that gap while during a recession. We did it during a recession. We've been able to close that gap while reducing our reliance on debt. So we haven't turned to debt to bring that down. We've increased our reserves at the same time during this position, during this time as well. So we've been able to increase our credit rating at the same time. And the credit rating is based on the financial performance that we're showing, but it's also based on a strong local economy. So we haven't done it by sacrificing building a balanced local economy as well. So we've been able to bring the Hanlon Creek Business Park on stream, for instance, and now we're seeing the land sales there. We're seeing the job growth that's gone along with it. So that would be one area of that strong financial management, because you can't do anything else if you don't have that laid down really solidly. Mm-hmm. The other area I think that we've made enormous progress on is sort of the next layer. You can't provide the community that people are seeking with respect to some of the more softer initiatives like recreation and parks, you don't have a strong economic base. And mm-hmm. so our work to implement our economic development strategy in the last 4 years and seeing the results that we've seen from the community when we meet at the economic summit, we have the right strategy. It's working. It's working to attract new jobs in the areas where we have strengths. And so we're seeing that growing as well, increasing partnerships. So that helps delay down. And then that allows you to do some of the other things for your community, whether it's bring in an affordable bus pass mm-hmm. for people on low incomes, or whether it's to continue to build good parks and trails and community gardens for our neighborhoods, et cetera.
Well, then I think the obvious question might be, there's a certain constituency in the city, and you probably know who I'm talking about, who think that this last term of council has been perhaps too reckless in its consideration on economic matters. So where does that dueling perception come from, then, that the city's been, you know, spendthrifty?
So you're talking about financial as opposed to economic development and growth.
Yeah.
Well, I think the numbers show for themselves. Obviously there's a political agenda here to get attention, but I think the numbers speak for themselves. Our tax rate increases have been coming down and we've closed the gap. Our debt, not only have we reduced our reliance on debt as our city grows, we've actually reduced the net debt. So when people say debt is out of control, they're wrong. Our debt has been coming down. And we've been doing that by increasing our reserves at the same time. And so what that means, as we build our reserves, we will have the money in place to fix the infrastructure when we need it. And mm-hmm. we won't have to rely on debt to fix our infrastructure in the future. So the credit rating is another example and the increase in the credit rating is just another example to say that the financial management is solid. Taxes during an election are always something that people want to talk about and try to use as a wedge issue. Mm-hmm. Our taxes for homeowners are lower than the average for our municipalities our size across the province. So we're competitive with our taxes. So we provide a great quality of life through strong financial management and taxes that are lower than other cities.
One of the other things that's come up in the election is the term the Guelph factor, and you and your supporters have been trying to take back that term, I think probably with some success if I just gauge on social media. But there is still the lingering thought among some people that this thing, the Guelph factor, is an impediment to making Guelph even more successful. Is there two sides to this issue? Are there things in the Guelph factor that maybe suggest that we could do better in terms of attracting business or supporting business?
So one of the things that we identified when we did our economic development strategy, above and beyond, you know, where were our strengths that we could take advantage of and leverage, was where were we weak? Mm-hmm. And there were a number of areas that we were weak in. And one of them was we heard criticism about our development approvals process and the business approvals process. So we went in and dug deeper into that to understand what that was. That then led to a complete review to streamline and cut out any unnecessary waste in that process. And we're still engaging the development community in that process. We've made a lot of changes. And the best reason that I know that it's changing is that the development industry and the business community is telling me.
Mm-hmm.
So on the weekend, I was at an event, and a JL from JL Home Hardware came up and said, you need to know that when we built our new place, it was just a delight to work with your staff. They were efficient. They were responsive. Worth Canada actually put a quote in our economic development annual report because they were so pleased with it. So I'm increasingly hearing more and more people say that. Are there some people that are still having challenges? Yes, and we're going to work to fix those challenges if they're our fault. So I want to be really clear that if the Guelph factor means that your business wants to punch a hole through our aquitard and compromise our water supply, well, we're going to have something to say about that. You know, if your business is about clear cutting a forest in the city against federal and provincial and municipal laws and bylaws, well, we're going to have something to say about that.
Mm-hmm.
And if that means that in your mind that's a negative Guelph factor, well, we're not going to compromise the quality of life of our community. We're going to partner with people to build this city. And what we've done, I think, through the process is, and we can see it all around us in the downtown, in the south, in the east, and the west, we have great partnerships with the development industry to build our growth strategy. We have a growth strategy. We don't build it ourselves. It's the business sector that builds it, and they're building it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing a lot of investment in our community. And I think why, turning the Guelph factor around is gaining traction is because people see the positive side of Guelph all the time. I hear it from people who look at us and are looking in and saying, how are you doing this? What's the factor in Guelph that allows you to achieve these kinds of things? So people are feeling that positive side. And I think they're getting frustrated with the negativity.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, I think it is irresponsible at this point for any leader in this community to be publicly saying we're not open for business or we're bad for business. Because the evidence is wrong to begin with, if you look around the city. And it damages our reputation. And it's irresponsible, I think, for any leader to be damaging our reputation to try to get votes. Tell us what you're going to do that's different or positive, but don't damage our reputation and put the future of our city ahead of, put your own political goals ahead of our city.
How do you battle that kind of negativity, though?
It's just constantly talking to people and engaging people. And from a perspective of being mayor, you lead as mayor by building consensus. I mean, as you know, a mayor is only one vote out of 13.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just about building consensus around the horseshoe. It's about building consensus with staff internally. It's about building consensus with the community as well, whether it's the business community because you're talking about development issues, or whether it's the social services community health sector because you're talking about well-being issues. So you have to build a big tent for a lot of people to come in so that you can find how you can work together. So that's, I think, how you change it is
mm-hmm.
actually by a constructive engagement of people. I find the politics of division that's being played out in this community just really hard to take because it's so not what this community is about.
Mm-hmm.
And it tears everything down to a lowest common denominator, whether you're pitting one part of the city against each other or you're ideologically trying to divide the city. It's not what community is about,
mm-hmm.
and it's certainly not what my leadership has been about.
Well, not to keep the negativity going, but we do have to touch on this, the Urbicon decision. I don't want to rehash the details, but I think there might be a lot of people in the city who are looking at that situation and saying $8 million is a lot of money. You could take everyone in Guelph to Wimpy's for a hamburger and still have money left over. So if I am to elect you again, how can I be sure that there isn't another Urbicon in the future?
Yeah. And certainly, I don't want to downplay any dollar that didn't directly go to the building is a lost opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the cost of this is not underestimated by myself or anybody that was involved. I'd like to go back and just sort of remind us where we were in 2008. We were in crisis back then. The builder had been on the job for almost 2 years. They had missed two deadlines for completion.
Mm-hmm.
We were unable to get a completion date. So council was very aware of the increasing risk to us, both the financial risk because the delays were adding costs to the project. So that project was going over regardless of whether the contract had been terminated because of those delays. There was also a risk to us because we had staff in buildings throughout the downtown and the leases were expiring. So we had a business continuity risk as well. So something had to give because we weren't moving forward. And so at the time, our CAO, after consulting with his team and getting external advice from a lawyer with expertise in contract and construction law, he believed we had the right to terminate and that that would get us control of the project so that we could get it finished and we could get our people into the building. When the court determined that we didn't have that right, we moved quickly to negotiate a settlement with Urbicon so that we could control the costs and bring a close to this. So I think it's important to recognize we were in a crisis at that time. So what have we learned from this? Well, we're not finished from learning. Our CAO is going to do is in the process of doing a risk review of it so that we can learn from it for future projects. But we learned immediately. So in terminating that contract, they were to do the renovation of the provincial courthouse, the old city hall. So we did a very different contract on that. That project came in on time and almost $1 million under budget. We did a different contract as well for the organics facility as well. That project came in on time and also came in under budget as well. So I think we can demonstrate some immediate learnings that were reflected in how we built that contract with the private sector and how we shared the risk with the private sector. So those are two examples in the short term and just in terms of how we move forward with these types of projects, we'll continue to learn from it. As we grow as a city, we're going to have bigger projects coming forward. And we're seeing the South End Community Center is a big project. The new police building headquarters and its renovation is a big project. So we will take the learnings from the Urbicon situation and apply them here.
Since you mentioned other sort of capital projects in the future, there's a debate about just how much we should be investing in new, or rather how we allocate those funds, because, you know, a lot of people are saying we need a South End Rec Center in the short term, perhaps, versus something like the proposal for St. George's Square or a new library complex downtown. What's when you're in council and you're having these meetings and you're discussing the long-term future of Guelph, what kind of factors come into play? What do you think about?
Well, first of all, we start with a box, a limit on how much money there is in the year that we approve and then over the 10 years. So we ensure the affordability and predictability for our taxpayers by having a box, and we live within that box. That box is created to make sure that we protect our financial position over the long time term so that we don't overextend ourselves, so that we don't jeopardize our credit rating, because that helps us do more, a good credit rating. So we start with that. So within that, then you have to start looking at priorities. So we look at, you know, the first priority is to maintain what we have. So the first priority is to make sure that we're maintaining our infrastructure. Now, that's challenging, like any municipality, because there's a huge infrastructure gap. But we're working to close that infrastructure gap, and we're achieving that in water and wastewater. So first is to make sure that we're maintaining our infrastructure, maintaining our facilities. Then you look at where do you need to make investments. And increasingly now, you know, the decisions that we make have to make sure that we're getting the best return on investment and that we're doing the right projects at the right time. Sometimes we need to do some projects first because they lead to a return on investment. Take the Hanlon Creek Business Park. It leads to where, you know, we'll generate profit from that as well as industrial tax base. Those types of things then help us build a South End community center because we have more funds in place to do that. So it really comes down to where the source of funding is, because some of these projects are not entirely or fully from property taxes. So a South End community center is primarily development charges. So it has a funding source that's been identified. So really that's a timing issue for that project. So partly it's where the funding source comes from. Partly it is opportunities that arise if there's a new federal program or provincial program that we can take advantage of.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what happened with the Guelph Civic Museum, is there was funding opportunities that we would be able to match the amount that we could put to it that allowed that to move forward. And increasingly it will be private-public partnerships. So the library project and the Baker District redevelopment will very much be about developing partnerships to enable us to be in a position that we can afford to move forward with these things.
One of the platforms of your mayoralty and your current campaign is the environment and pursuing green initiatives. There was a news story this morning in the Guelph Mercury about the building of new homes that will
yes.
be environmentally, you know, airtight and green energy and all that. Why is it that, do you think, that some people still see the environment or environmental, you know, environmentally sound construction as an extravagance, and how are you trying to change minds on that?
Well, I think they just haven't caught up with the reality, and they're not seeing that environmental issues are very costly to manage, and that if you can get ahead of them, that you can save yourself a lot of money. So I'll give you one example in water and in water conservation. If we were to consume in Guelph water at the same rate as the average Canadian does, we would have to build $55 million of more infrastructure to provide for that demand. So that there's a real dollar savings to being a leader in water management and wastewater management.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a great business case for it. In terms of our building sector and the leadership we're seeing, we're really fortunate to have great leaders in Guelph that are looking to push the envelope in terms of how homes are built. And in his introduction yesterday, Scott Reed from Reed's Heritage Homes, who's been selected as five builders across the country to build these net zero homes,
mm-hmm.
he gave the statistics of how much energy costs have gone up for the homeowner over the last number of years and what the projections are moving forward. So again, there's a great business case, and as we see energy costs increase in the community, it's going to put more and more pressure, certainly on people on fixed incomes, on low incomes, but it's going to push really into the middle class as well. And interestingly, one of the questions that I had from the Guelph Wellington Seniors Association was how are we going to help to mitigate or reduce the impact of increasing costs on seniors. Now, taxes was one of them,
mm-hmm.
but heating costs was the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so what, you know, one of the things that, because we're so far ahead of other municipalities with our community energy plan, we're in a position to bring in programs into our community that are funded not from municipal property taxes, but third party, that will really help people in reducing their energy costs in their homes.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that we've seen with being ahead on the environment is that it's great for the economy. We're attracting new technologies in water and wastewater management. We're helping them to pilot their new technologies in our facilities. We're attracting businesses in the energy sector, so Canadian Solar, bringing now over 600 jobs into our community. Through our other energy work, we've brought in four new companies that are interested in the opportunity in being in Guelph because of the Guelph market, but also because Guelph is a great launching pad into the North American market. So it's good for the bottom line. It's good for the economy. It's good for people. And it's good for our financial management at the city as well.
Well, one of the biggest green initiatives is to get more people on public transit. And so I wanted to ask you, if you're reelected, there was the lockout this past summer. How will you work towards repairing that relationship with the transit union and work with them to further
yeah.
improve Guelph Transit?
Well, as a council, we expect our administration to rebuild their relationship because they work with, it's our management team that works with our employee groups.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be wanting to see their plan to do that, and we're going to want to see indication of success. right? We want to see that there's an improvement there. More broadly around transit, and why this is critical for us to get that relationship in place is, you know, we've made a number of changes to transit over the last number of years. They've been tough going in terms of making the changes. I think we're stabilizing the system. We're seeing improvements, measured improvements in performance. We get regular updates at council on those. But we're still, we still have not hit the point of being on the path to a transit system that we need for us to really to live in a sustainable city, a modern sustainable city. So we've got a lot more to do on transit. You know, we can just look to Toronto. I know it's a bigger city. They've got bigger congestion issues. But it's just because they're bigger and a little bit further down the path. If we want to avoid what we're seeing in Toronto and other larger centers, we have to change the channel on transit. And that's going to, you know, we need to get out of thinking about transit for a small, medium-sized city and start to, of the last century, and say, okay, things have changed. What do we need today for this century, for a modern city to serve us properly?
Well, you said we're not on the path yet, so what are the first steps to getting on the path?
Well, I think it's revisiting the transit growth strategy, and it's about 5 years, so it's a good point to revisit it. I think it's looking at that and saying, and then looking at it, what have we achieved, what haven't we achieved? Are there opportunities now to bring forward some of the recommendations there? I think we really have to take a hard look at it and say, does it really pitch high enough? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe we're just pitching it too low. And that might need some really bold steps and bold vision to pitch it to the right level.
I ask this of every candidate, and you will be no exception, but is there an issue that you think isn't being as well discussed as it could be on the campaign trail, whether it's something, a pet issue of yours, whether it's something your supporters or constituents are telling you?
Affordable housing. Guelph Wellbeing, the consultation that we went through, identified three themes. So one was connectivity, social and physical connectivity. And while there's things that we want to do there, I can see a lot of partnerships, a lot of collaboration. Transit will be a big part of it, and there's conversations around that. So I see the conversations, I see the partnerships and collaborations in that area. Food security was the other one. A second one, and again, there is an enormous network of people working on that issue and really making fundamental change. The one that's struggling is affordable housing, because it's a challenging one to deal with at the municipal level. We don't have control over the forms of taxation to really make a difference. It needs partnerships with the federal and provincial governments, and that's been challenging to do. But I still think that there are some creative ways that as a community that we can start to, you know, a multifaceted approach to address affordable housing. I think it's just going to increasingly become a concern in Guelph, and already is a concern, because there are far too many people who are living in housing that is far more than 30% of their income, which is usually sort of the marker. If you're above 30%, you're in an unaffordable situation.
And affordable housing seems to be something that keeps getting passed from municipal to provincial to federal too, and then back down the line.
It's because it requires all levels of government, because it requires the private sector as well. It's a challenging one to tackle. But I think it's one that we've really got to buckle down on and figure a way how we can do that.
Well, perhaps to wrap up, I know you said you're not thinking about your legacy just yet, but I'm sure it's occurred to you, you know, and again, you've been on city council, whether as a councilor or as a mayor, for a long time. What do you think, not to use the word epitaph, but what do you think when you know, they talk about Karen Farbridge and the Guelph history books, it will say about you and your years as mayor?
Well, I came out of a tradition or a practice into this role of engagement. Mm-hmm. And so engaging people, engaging multi-stakeholders in decision-making. And so when I was first elected as a council, the chief administrative officer met with me at that time and said, so what are you wanting to achieve? He met with all members of council. I said, well, I really want to change how we're engaging citizens. And that led in that term to the development of the public involvement guidelines. And since that time, we've grown and evolved those significantly. So I fundamentally believe that we're stronger together, that we can be better together. I fundamentally believe that if we can release the capacity of this community, which we are releasing its capacity, that we can achieve bigger and better things. And that's why open government is a part of this, because a lot of people think open government is about transparency or perhaps the latest app that you can report a pothole on directly to your government. I mean, mm-hmm. it's those things, but it's way more than that. It's much more about redefining our relationship with with citizens and how we make decisions and who makes decisions. Mm-hmm. And sharing that decision-making power with our community. So that has been an underlying theme throughout all of my service as a community, and so that would be certainly one of the things that I would hope that people would recall in the future. Yeah.
And where can people learn more information about you and your campaign?
At my website, so Karen for Guelph, with the four being the number four, mm-hmm. and information up there. They can follow me on Twitter or on Facebook as well.
Well, Karen Farbridge, thank you for your time today. Good luck with the campaign.
Thank you very much.
And once again, that was Mayor Karen Farbridge, and you can learn more about her campaign at her website, karenforguelph.ca. And that brings us to an end of this edition to the Guelph Politicast. Stay tuned for the Cam Guthrie interview, which will be posted on the 24th, sometime in the afternoon, as soon as possible, for those of you who are waiting to go to the polls, the physical, actual polls on Election Day to vote. We few, we happy few, you will be able to hear the Cam Guthrie interview on October 24th. Anyway, the hosting for the Guelph Politicast is provided by Podbean, and you can listen to all the old episodes of the Guelph Politicast at guelphpoliticast.podbean.com. The theme music for the Guelph Politicast is The Crazy Pills and Break It Down. And of course, for all the latest election information, you can go to Guelph Politico at guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca. And if you are waiting for Election Day, remember it is October 27th. And for more information on the municipal election, you can go to guelph.ca/vote. And with that last little piece of information, I bid you good day. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on the Guelph Politicast. Bye for now.